Status of the state budget, number two on the reports, is going to be followed by the 2007-2008 budget discussion presented by Mr. Miller. And are there any other requests to change the order of business? We're good. Then could I have a reading, a review of the minutes, and then a motion if they're in order, please?
I move approval of the minutes.
Do we have a second? Seconded by Ms. Dickinson. Do we have any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved as set forth. And now I would like to have Mr. Greg Halfman please come up so we can joyfully recognize the employees of the year. Joyfully. Thank you.
As a member of the selection committee, it's my honor to be the host this evening for presenting our employees of the year. And I'd like to start right off with our clerical employee of the year, Val Harrigan. Val is the senior secretary clerk at the adult school, and we service about 5,000 students at 18 different locations. And the finger paints always end up at the parenting class and not at the Spanish class. And the free weights are at the fitness class and not at the nursing home. And that's because of Val's organization. Val is also the summer school secretary. And summer school is an interesting creature because you're really inventing a new school district. Three brand new elementary schools with brand new faculties and brand new student bodies, two secondary schools, new staffs, new student bodies, and same thing. I've never had a first grade teacher saying, boy, you know, I know we've got state standards, but why do I have calculators? The calculators are in the geometry class. I've never had a geometry teacher call and say, glue sticks, what would those be for? They're in the first grade class. Val makes that work without a hitch. And then the amazing thing is, within 48 hours of after summer school is over, it's all disappeared. And it's ready for the beginning of school like it was never there. Val is also the GED secretary. And the GED is, we are the only vendor in the entire county for the GED. So we service everybody within the county, and we're also providing that service at the jail and at Grizzly Academy. And again, everybody's in the right place on the right day, has the right test in front of them. Val makes all that look easy. Val is the ROP secretary, okay? The Regional Occupational Program. Now, again, as I'm running through this, she is the summer school secretary. She is the ROP secretary. She is the GED secretary. It's not like this is the staff. This is the staff. For the ROP, that's a countywide program, and San Luis Coastal is a big player in that program. Val is all over the county. You know, it's not unusual for her to say, oh, I need to run down to Rio Grande this morning, get this paperwork in before 9 o'clock. Keep running, Val. And Val goes to all their events. She went to the state finals, and she came back. She said, oh, I'm so excited. Normal people to replace her. I present to you a very abnormal person. Val Harrigan, Employee of the Year. I'd like to introduce Pete Zotovich, who will present our Physical Support Employee of the Year. And just a moment before I leave this category, also nominated in this category for Clerical Support Person Employee of the Year were Susan Kaufman, Kelly Lau, and Shaw Van Dyke.
Good evening, Board. Pete Zotovich, Principal of Morro Bay High School. It's with great pleasure that I introduce Mr. Gary Winch, who is Employer of the Year, Physical Support. Gary?
Uh,
Gary is such a special person. I have Arnie Slotchy here tonight with me to also help out. Also, Gary started in the district in 1981. For the first 4 years, he was at Morro Bay, Los Osos Middle School, San Luis Obispo High School, Morro Bay High School, and Pacific Beach High School, Pacific Beach Teach. Then that was his first 4 years. Then he did 22 years at Morro Bay High School. And so he's been, they always say that high school principals need two very, very important things to really make their school work, and that's a lead secretary and a heck of a lead custodian. And I just happen to be blessed enough to have both. And Gary is, like I said, Employee of the Year this year, physical support. Gary's, in the last few months, Gary's had some significant emergencies in his family. And through all of that, the tremendous support from the high school towards Gary, and Gary working with us, has really been something. And as soon as he's able to, when those things have been kind of been worked through, Gary's right back at school doing his thing. Many times you'll see him sneak in late at night to make sure that everything got done and everything's ready for our teachers the very next day. some of the things that could describe Gary, when I first got to Morro Bay High School, I came from a school that had 22 custodians to a school that had one daytime and about six at night. This guy's worth about 22 in himself. He's all by himself. And it was really something. I was, wow, how's everything going to get done? And then he got it done. This guy's amazing. Don't mess around with Gary in the summertime. When he cleans Morro Bay High School in the summer, he cleans Morro Bay High School. I remember one time I walked into the hallway by accident, and I started to step in, and I knew the wax was wet. And boy, if I had stepped on that, would it have been me? I'd have been in big trouble with Gary. Gary has an unbelievable sense of humor. He takes a lot of jokes because short jokes. Most of them brought on by himself. When he did receive this award the other day, we actually had him on a chair so he could stand up, and he was bigger than everybody. He just enjoyed that so much. But he kind of wanted to be on that chair. So. Gary is the most loyal guy I've ever met. You know, the old history, I know more war stories than Gary talking to me about what he did during the war. It was really something. Arnie, you want to?
I just want to say we're honoring Gary tonight for classified Employee of the Year, but if we had a District Man of the Year, the same person would be standing up here today. Yeah. I just want to say he's the heart and soul of our department, and this has been a long time coming for him, and I couldn't do my job without him. So I just want to thank him for the job he does. And he always puts his job, his family, his friends first. And I can't say enough about this man beside me. Thank you.
Congratulations, Gary.
Other nominees in the Physical Support Employee of the Year category are Jerry Dunlap and Terry Fosmar. I'd like to present Kurt Collins, who will introduce our School Support Employee of the Year.
And I would like to introduce you to Mrs. Marlene Righetti. Marlene. Marlene is an unbelievable employee. She gives 110% every day. She is so gracious and loving. She's a special ed paraeducational education employee, and she constantly goes out of her way to make sure that all the kids feel like they are important, that they are loved. She works with some special needs kids that they come to school early just so that they can be with her and see her. She does things on weekends. She will take them to the theater and places that maybe they wouldn't have an opportunity to go and see. She'll also, we have something called Super Fridays at Hawthorne School where everyone gets to choose a mini course. And she'll teach a class, and it always fills up first because the kids all love her. And it doesn't matter who you are at our school, everyone knows her. She also does our birthday calendar and does a beautiful job in decorating it, putting all the kids' names, and kids walk in and look for their name when it's their month, and she just constantly goes above and beyond the call of duty. And the last thing that I'd like to say about Marlene is she's always there if you need her. Not only is she great as a paraeducator and working with special needs kids, but she'll come out and she'll do yard duty. She'll do crossing guard. You know, she'll be the principal if I asked her to. And she could probably do a better job than I would. But she's just a wonderful person, and I'm just so proud of her. And Hawthorne is so proud that she was chosen by the committee. She's just an awesome person, and we all love her very much.
The other nominees in the school support category are Laura Brewer, Kathy Chavez, Rose Fowler, Nancy Koppel, Kathy Pearson, Marvin Pesch, Vicki Rayburn, and Nora Tony. Now to present the Administrator of the Year, Ed Valentine.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Kurt Collins to come forward, if I may. I think Kurt was ready to give this particular recognition to Marlene just before him, but Kurt, it is such a pleasure to stand before you and have an opportunity to recognize excellence. It's especially so when the person being recognized is both a colleague and a friend. Kurt is being honored as the Administrator of the Year for 06-07, but as with all talented people, Kurt could be selected any year for the job that he does. When you think of the title, Administrator of the Year, perhaps the first thing that jumps to mind is vision and competence on the job, and Kurt has both. Under Kurt's leadership and that of the wonderful staff at Hawthorne, Hawthorne has become one of the true jewels in San Luis Coastal. Recognized as a California Distinguished School, Hawthorne has pioneered extended kindergarten, fluid groupings, and virtually school-wide after-school assistance. And while the rest of us have been talking about teacher collaboration time, Kurt and his staff found ways for teachers to meet and talk about kids, who's doing well, who's struggling, what to do about it, as a team and as a culture at Hawthorne. Anyone walking in Kurt's school will see very quickly that it is a place with a vision and a place of great professional competence. But maybe even more importantly, people will see that Hawthorne is a great place of the heart. Students matter to Kurt. He and his staff are certainly academic advocates for their kids. But Kurt goes farther. He visits homes, he telephones families, he connects families to resources, he coaches kids, and he sees that they have opportunities beyond the classroom. Kurt is the first one to tell you that he is blessed to work with teachers and staff at Hawthorne, and the credit for anything goes to everyone. When you look at a great administrator, you look for someone with professional skills, but you also look with someone who has a heart for the job and the humility to recognize that no one goes it alone. Kurt is that complete person. I'm proud to call him a colleague, I'm proud to call him a friend, and I'm proud to present Kurt Collins as the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Administrator of the Year.
Always.
and how much of a difference they make to the students in our district, because it truly makes it a terrific district from everybody's perspective. So thanks to everyone here tonight and also to the others that contribute so much. And we'll take our break. Okay, we'll bring the meeting back together. There, from what I understand, there's no correspondence tonight from the public, so we'll go into public comment about any issues that relate to San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I have one item which I'll discuss in just a second, but is there anyone else who's left after the party stop that would like to address the board? Seeing none. I just want to, well, I know, but she does that all the time. As I mentioned, Lisa Quinn was going to speak to the board tonight about the Summer Break Pass, which is a program for children K through 12 that provides reduced cost transportation on the city transportation system, and they're back on the table. So if you know of anybody or the schools want to take those to make them available to the students, I think Kurt took some also for Hawthorne, but they're available through the city, and it's a reduced price for children K through 12, and that's on the back table. And if that's the only member of the public, then we'll go right into reports by school staff and student representatives. And student representatives, there are none here tonight. So other than beginning with Mr. Miller on number two, the status of the budget, are there any other school staff that wish to provide any reporting? Mr. Valentine, Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I just learned how to turn my microphone on. Typically, I would probably report out at the end of the meeting, but I wanted to just share with the board what a wonderful...
Russell Miller will provide the status of the state budget and also discuss under action discussion, item number five that was moved up, the 2007-2008 budget.
Thanks, Mr. Spatterford. This last week was the delivery of the governor's May revision to his January proposal for the state budget, scheduled for adoption by July 1st. And in his January proposal, he had a number of programs and ideas that he would like to fund. And during the 6 month or 5 month period between the time he delivered that message and today, the state's financial fortunes have been like a yo-yo, up and down, back and forth. Started in March with the first measurement of the state income having been nowhere near expectations. It was way below. The April 1st measurement was way below. Then all of a sudden, the tax return started to hit on April 15th, and it actually exceeded. At one point, it was $1.2 billion below expectations, and by the time all of the income taxes had been counted, it was a little bit above, almost $400 million above expectations. So it seemed as if his proposals were capable of being enacted in terms of resources available. Then the legislative analyst jumps in and says, whoa, we found a mistake. And the Department of Finance says, no, there's no mistake. And the LAO ended up being right. There is a $364 million error in the education side of the state budget in terms of less money than what they had thought was available. So in the May revision conference that we had, besides the aspects of the proposal the governor put out in January being not much different, he has no money for mandated costs. He's not giving equalization to school districts. He does have money available for a nutrition program. He does have money available for some safety issues. And he does have some teacher mentoring kind of in-service money available. There's a number of other ones which I don't recall at the moment, but all of those are in jeopardy, or something is in jeopardy to the tune of $364 million now. And the May revision buzz, if you will, was about what is it that the governor is going to have to take off the table in order to balance the budget for education in the next year. It's interesting that in the political side of this conversation, the legislature is probably the one who's going to have to make the decision, not the governor, about what they will or won't fund. It seems as if the governor's strategy is going to be to maintain, these are my proposals, you decide what you don't want to fund. And so the legislature is a little bit nervous about what course it will take, and it'll be interesting to watch how that resolves itself. The impact on San Luis Coastal doesn't seem to be significant in any of those issues. We're somewhat immune because of our basic aid from the any equalization or revenue limit type of manipulation. And the programs that he raised the floor of Prop 98, and that was very significant strategy on his part. Mr. Buckman.
I'm curious to know whether the cuts are going to be deep enough. Is COLA, the expected COLA changing?
COLA and growth will be funded, almost certainly.
And what amount?
Pardon?
Do we know roughly what amount?
4.53 is the new COLA. It used to be 4.03, and I think it's 4.53 or 4.58. I can't remember. But COLA and growth will be funded. There will be COLA for categorical programs that currently exist. There will be a state-funded COLA for their share of special ed. The significant issue on special ed, though, is that the overall COLA will only be 3.3% instead of 4.58 because the state is not funding the federal portion, and neither is the feds funding their own COLA. Yeah, go figure. But the encroachment or the support that the general fund provides for special ed will increase next year almost certainly, and we have that as a budget issue that we have to confront. There was no proposal in the governor's proposals to lighten the load for districts on that issue.
What about all that art money and all those special exciting projects? What's happening with those?
It's hard to say. It depends on what kind of support they'll get from the legislators at this point. All of those special things that you just mentioned and many things that you didn't are on the table in terms of what's going to make up the $364 million.
So what Adrian's referring to are the block grants for materials.
The block grant pieces. They're actually still going to be funded almost certainly, okay? There is no cut in last year's special block grant funding. Okay, so the previous year's remains intact. I'm sorry, I forgot to say that.
Any other questions by board, staff?
Okay.
Thank you very much, Russell. And
all right.
Thank you.
Then we can move almost directly into our own district budget. And we're skipping from item 3 to item 5 for those who need to get to the book. And, excuse me. If we look at the chart, what we're looking at now is the first rendition of our district budget for 07-08. And I will start the conversation by letting you know it's a short conversation, first of all, because there's still much to be done. But we've been able to nail down the expected expenditures for 07-08. We know how much we're going to spend in salaries. We know what our benefit increases are. We know what types of insurance, utilities, legal costs we're going to have, to the extent that we have predictable legal costs. And then we have reserved some extra funding for unexpected legal costs for next year. But we've nailed down our expenditures. What we don't know about is our revenues. And our annual problem in constructing a budget is we don't know what our revenues are until August. But we have to adopt our budget by July 1st. So we've made a couple of assumptions and predictions about revenues that we think are safe. And in fact, they're somewhat cases, but we're not sure how much. One of the tasks that I have is to try and predict as accurately as possible how much our revenues are going to grow by. I've built an assumption into this year's budget of a 5% increase in property tax values. The 5% is conservative in the aspect that the county auditor is talking about a countywide increase of 9.6%. But you have to remember, much of that 9.6% is because of growth and development happening in the Pomo and Paso Robles. There's virtually, well, I take it back. San Luis Obispo isn't doing much in the way of growth. Los Osos has some, Morro Bay has more. So the three districts that we are a part of have a little bit varying difference, but none of those three are to the level of Paso Robles or Napomo. So I'm feeling that a 5% prediction is conservative but accurate enough to build our budget on. What we hope to have for you before we go into the next meeting is a backup opinion, if you will, from the county auditor's office. She's working on a prediction for us based upon the different zones of assessment that are engaged in our county. I make this up, but I think there's 34 zones of assessment within the county of San Luis Obispo, and there's 8 within the district boundaries of our school district. Each one has its own individual characteristics and its own growth rates and its own increases. Taken as a whole, we will get a better idea of what the August assessments will look like. It won't be absolutely accurate, but it's a lot more accurate than my guesswork at this point. So what we will do is bring back to you at the next meeting in June, hopefully, a more accurate prediction. Every 1% increase in revenues equates to about $390,000. And so if we go to 5, let me look real quick. Yeah, $390,000. If we go from 5 to 6%, that'll be an initial $390,000. This is important for the second reason. We have constructed a strategic planning process that has a outcome of a set of priorities that we're recommending to the board for adoption. But it has a price tag to it, and the price tag happens to be about $415,000 to $425,000. Right now, the budget that you see is going to be nearly balanced. It actually has a $90,000 deficit to it, but for the purposes of a $51 million budget, I call that nearly balanced, okay? And so it's very, very important to our strategic planning process and adoption of next year's budget priorities to have an additional revenue source or look at some aspects of our expenditures that need to be reduced if the adoption of those priorities becomes the desire of the board. So what we will do is be looking at that in the next meeting with some more solid information and more solid recommendations from staff.
The superintendent's budget recommendations.
Okay, now you're skipping to item number 4?
Well, I'm hopping back and forth here.
Number 6, I mean.
It has a value of $416,000.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
And we are assuming, we have been assuming, that we would be able to cover tier 1 with the monies that we already knew we had?
Now, thank you for bringing that up, because there's one piece of my little conversation I neglected, and I'd like to follow up on that point, okay?
Sure.
And I hope it answers your question. When we look at the superintendent's recommendations and the budget priorities, they are $416,000. If it turns out that my estimation of a 5% increase is accurate, and the budget doesn't necessarily have a surplus to fund these, we are going to have a surplus in our undesignated reserve. Those are one-time monies. We have unspent money from this year's budget that almost certainly will fall. And if you look on our chart in item number 5, and you look on the right-hand column, it's number 9 of the descriptors. It's $445,000, okay? That's not necessarily what it's going to be, but at a minimum, that's what it will be. And so to the extent that you decide that the budget recommendations from the superintendent are necessary, we can use the strategy we've implemented a number of times and have one-time money to bridge until the money occurs. So we could safely adopt recommendations with the theory of using one-time money, bridging over for a year, or even just until August when we certainly know things. There'll be aspects of the superintendent's recommendations which have personnel issues attached to them. Mm-hmm. And personnel issues require us to get a rather soon start on hiring process. Right? Quite use good English on that one, but you get the idea, okay? We got to hurry up. But we have issues with the hiring process that, should you feel these are important enough issues, that we certainly have the ability to dip into our one-time money to make it happen.
Okay, thank you. So then, given that, and your conservative estimate of 5%, and I believe you just told us that each additional percent, were we to receive it, would be equivalent to about $370,000.
To 390, yeah.
390. Oh, can't read my own writing. We would be through Tier 2.
We would be.
Am I understanding this correctly?
No, not exactly. We'd just be up to the first tier, $416,000, okay? If we get a 1% increase, mm-hmm. we could get close to finishing all of Tier 1 with the money that we would receive.
Oh, without going into it. Okay.
Yeah, without going into the one-time. I would not recommend one-time money for ongoing expenditures unless we've cognizantly choose it for just one-year process. Because once you start allocating one-time money to hire people on a long-term basis, you ultimately have to pay the piper. And how do you do that unless you know you're going to have the money? Say that happens. We need our economic uncertainty to survive for that period of time. But to use it for a known expenditure is not the purpose for which it was designed.
I guess what I was asking is, the unappropriated money is really like the uncertainty fund on top of
yes.
that, not to dip into the uncertainty fund, but to have the unappropriated money only for emergencies temporarily.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay, then what we'll do is bring back at the next meeting a more formal, and you'll get your budget books with all the charts, the backup, the backgrounds. We're going to strive to try and have that to you this weekend, so you'll end up with 2 weekends to peruse it and study it. We're very hopeful to give you sufficient time to be fully informed about the budget and have your issues and concerns being able to be talked about.
Just one other thing.
Yes,
Russell,
ma'am.
I wanted to thank you for the explanation that I know we come to you
on the
every
back of the
year,
chart?
Several times a year,
I
asking
that,
the same questions over and over, and it's
okay.
Really well done. And
I call that the Maryland chart of explanations.
Is it? Okay. Well, and Maryland could understand it, so that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Russell? Okay. Thank you, Russell, very much. As always. Next on the agenda is the instructional materials adoption, K-8 Social Science and 7-8 Science by Damian Barnett. Damian, please.
what you have before you is our recommendation for both the K-8 History Social Science adoption and the 7-8 Science adoption. This has been a lengthy process that the teachers have gone through, and the History Social Science materials have been selected and piloted and reviewed by almost every teacher in the district, and this is the recommendation. And they're currently on display here at the district office. If anybody would like to come and review them, we'd welcome that, and they can arrange for my office. And we'd be happy if they could fill out an evaluation as well.
Thank you, Damien. I did take the opportunity to go and look at the two adoptions, and Damien was kind enough to meet with me on short notice and kind of go over them with me a little bit. There's a tremendous amount of work that goes into selecting what your adoption is going to be, and I'm grateful to the people who participated in that process because it was, I'm sure, lengthy. So when I looked at the materials, it was just as it had been previously when I came as a parent one time. I could look at it, at the text with an eye to, you know, if the pictures seem interesting, if the layout seems interesting, if I were a child, would, you know, is it a book that would, my option has leveled readers so that they're able, teachers are really able to truly differentiate instruction for students that are accelerated and students that are struggling. They have materials for, you know, the broad spectrum of students. So it was interesting, and I appreciate your taking the time with me to go over it. It was time well spent. Thank you.
I'll do Adrian, then Mark.
Oh, it was me, actually.
Are you sharing?
We're sharing.
We're not going to change your mind, are we?
No, it'll be Mark and then Walt, please. No, that's fine, Walt.
I got $10.
I got a couple of questions just in general. First, I'd like to say that I'm thrilled that the advisory committee, the curriculum council, and so many teachers have had a chance to look at this. Mm-hmm. Because notwithstanding the recommendation that board members review the materials and provide staff with insights, I suspect that my review of these materials would be a lot like they were in grades 6, 7, 8. So I'm not sure how many insights I would have. But what I wanted to ask you is, have we gotten feedback from the public about any of these texts and concerns about them? That would help, I think, for us as the adoption process goes forward to know what kind of feedbacks you're getting.
At this time, we don't have any feedback. We've had a couple people come and look at them, and we've given them feedback forms, and after they looked at them, they didn't turn the feedback forms in. So.
Okay. And then my other question, in maybe this is something you don't know standing here today, tonight, Damien, and that's fine, but is there some departure, significant departure from these texts that goes through this adoption process from previous texts? And if so, is there some place where they highlight what's different about these texts versus the previous cycle of materials?
There wouldn't be a place that would highlight the differences between the two texts. These texts come from the state selects a set of publishers that they say meets the requirements to be a standards-based publisher, and we work from that list. And so there wouldn't be a comparison to past lists about them.
Can I say something on that?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think Mary was going to respond to something.
Oh, is the light on? Oh, excuse me. I didn't see the light. I'm trying to see the light.
That's good.
Just to point out, this is an area in which we've been insufficient in the past, and this new adoption is aligned to the standard, so it's noted throughout the text. So the teachers have that cue in terms of organizing their materials, so that's the added attraction in this adoption for us.
Thanks, Mary. Let Mark go, and then Adrian will go. Mark's
Thanks.
Been waiting patiently. Thanks.
No, I haven't. Adrian, I find it unfortunate that parents haven't come forward, because what will happen is we'll adopt it, and then it'll be in the classroom, and then we'll hear from them, but hopefully not. Hopefully we've done a great job. I have two questions. It's my understanding that as we have progressed through the frameworks, we're getting less and less choices from the State Board of Education in terms of texts to adopt. Were there a number of choices to choose from? or was there only one?
No, there were a number of choices to choose from, and in fact, more and more publishers are submitting. I mean, it doesn't necessarily make the list longer, but I know, I think from the history together, with the evaluations from the piloters and selected what you see here tonight.
Okay, and the second part of my question is, I've often heard, and I don't know if this is true, and I'm sorry that Russell left, but maybe we can get some help. The state allocates us so much money for the purchase of textbooks, which is often not enough. Is that still true? Is this causing some encroachment? Are we having to come?
No. We
have enough.
We have enough money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
We have another money person here.
No cap. I was hoping.
Adrian. We've been preparing that, you know, we're entering into the core adoption cycle. It's history, social science, then math, then language arts. That's what the next few years will bring, and the district has been preparing for that, and so we have instructional materials, budget money saved and ready to go for this.
Thank you. Adrian?
I just wanted to say that that the fields of history and science are kind of like computers. They get obsolete really quickly. There's so much, it's such a fast-breaking topic. So the new textbooks are good. So that's one thing that will be different is new information.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm. It'll be nice to not have maps that still have the USSR on them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing. One of the
actually, I have to add it back.
Yes.
I just wanted to add that when you think of an adoption, you think of this is a social studies book, but it's actually a whole complement of materials that includes the book and workbooks and DVDs, and you know, it's really a big production.
Any other questions for Damien? Damien, thank you, as always, for your direction on this.
So just a reminder to the public that they will be available until June 5th, so please come.
Thank you. I don't believe there's any other board action that has to go forward tonight, just the discussion. Okay. Next on the agenda is the possible discussion, or the discussion regarding the possible future agenda item related to facilities security and perimeter fencing by Dr. Valentine, please.
Yes, thank you. Just prior to the last board meeting, the board received some correspondence regarding concerns, particularly related to perimeter fencing at Sinsheimer, but also expressing an interest in just taking a look at the notion of facility security and perimeter fencing. Scott Chaldy, who's here tonight, shared with us some of those concerns, and welcome Scott to the meeting. The at each board member's seat is a aerial photograph of the sites in our school district with the perimeter fencing outlined and the points of possible entry also outlined. The board will have a discussion to, and Brad Parker, by the way, provided those and is here to walk you through questions that you might have about the visuals there. Board asked for an opportunity to just kind of touch bases on its philosophy regarding perimeter fencing and open space and contiguous space and those types of topics and security. And you'll have that opportunity tonight. And if the board wishes to proceed with a...
So kind of the reason I wanted to bring it forward is I would like us to consider an agenda item that kind of lays out for us, and these are just a few things kind of off the top of my head, the status of our joint use agreements with other entities, because that's important, particularly with SLO Rec and I assume in Morro Bay and in Los Osos Baywood. What are our current protocols, our SOP, standard operating procedure for security on our sites and making sure that people on the school sites are supposed to be there, and if they're not, making sure they leave. And are our current procedures for student safety on sites appropriate for the realities with which we find ourselves? And there's a temptation when there's been some horrific event to sort of start looking for the potential for that to happening in our own neighborhoods. And I'd while I do think there's some value in that exercise, I also think it's fraught with some dangers, but not the least of which is to stop doing important things that benefit our community for fear of remote yet terrible things that might occur. I feel like the only way we can balance that situation out is for a public open discussion about it, where we have a chance for parents to give us some input, and where we have a chance for the district and our personnel to present the reality of the situation and what we currently do about things. I lived across from C.L. Smith the first couple of years that I lived here, and I lived next to Laguna Middle School until just a few months ago. So that's a combination of about 17 years of living directly next to one of our school sites. And it was a big part of my family's activities and relationship with our school to be able to go on the school grounds after hours and to have use the recreational facilities and have for knowing that your kids can go down the street to the playground, to the track at Laguna, or over to the baseball fields at C.L. Smith and play with their friends and be safe. I don't want us to lose that unless there's some compelling reason that we need to change that situation, and I'm not convinced that it is, but I do think it is a fair question for members of the public and our parents to be asking us, and that's what I have in mind for this particular agenda.
I'd like to echo that. It's often painted after an incident at a school that somehow it's the schools that have created the issue when it's really the public that's coming onto the school grounds and the problems that are in society that are coming to the schools. We don't teach those types of issues at schools. And Brad, I also want to say this picture of my car parked in the bus zone at Laguna was very unfair.
That was you.
Walt, did you have other comments you wanted to make?
No. I'm sorry, John, I didn't turn that on.
We have the manual, the use manual we'll pass down. Also, in addition to what Walt had said, I think that as this item comes back related to those items, and I also would like to mention another issue that Walt brought up. As a coach of soccer, softball during youth leagues for years past, we used to use the school facilities on the weekend, then go down to Sinsheimer at Sinsheimer Park, and it is hard not to have access back and forth, so I'd like those items considered also in terms of how the community is using. Because my sister-in-law who lives in Tustin, when I was 20 years ago, we were down there, you could get on the school site over the weekend for whatever reason. Tustin Elementary School closed the school site. It was all fenced off, and no kids on the weekend were ever in playing on the grounds because there was a 6-foot-high or an 8-foot-high fence around the grounds, and that caused an issue in the neighborhood, which was ongoing. So I think there are those issues that it would be helpful to look at. And
there's also the issue of getting out. You know, I remember working late at Arroyo Grande High School in a portable, and I tried never to do that. But, you know, there's this one gate that I like to get out of, and when that's locked, you're kind of stuck. So it's nice to be able to exit.
Thank you, True. Any other comments, public comments, with the few that are here? Any other board questions? Would you like to contribute? Thank you.
Well, I can contribute because you guys are going to bring this back and ask for public comment.
You can, of course,
no problem.
Do this tonight.
Thank you
sure.
for your time. In regards to fencing, the issue was, of course, important to me. And in the letter that my wife sent, which I should have put my name on it, I didn't, just because she's more organized than I sometimes. By the way, we brought up the topic before Virginia Tech with Mrs. Hunter first, just kind of say, hey, how did the fence get to be there? Because it's kind of a partial fence, and she had informed us that the PTA did it. Then we went to the PTA, and they're kind of like, well, I don't know how we'd come up with the money for that. And then eventually we gave the letter to the board. But there's no way that we want to impede the public's access to the grounds outside of the school hours. It's just really for the school, the time that school's in session. Yesterday, my wife dropped off my daughter, and she had a half hour to kill because she comes here for parent participation with my son. My son loves to see the pool because they're working on the little kiddie pool, and he's excited about it. So they drive down to look at it, and sure enough, there's a guy down there, paper bag in his hands, 9:15 in the morning, he's already drinking down at the park. And it's just really, it's 100 yards from my classroom that my daughter's in and 100 feet from the grounds. And so those are the kind of concerns we raise. We don't want to, you know, keep people off the grounds on weekends or even school's out at 2:30, open the gates, it's ready to go. Let's have soccer practice. Los Ranchos doesn't have any problem with it. They practice there all the time, and they have huge fences. That's all. I just want to make that quick. And we'll come back when you guys open it. I appreciate you guys considering the topic.
No, thanks. And I think what you're seeing is part of a process to gather as much information as possible so a decision or a direction can be developed through the administration for the school district that makes the most sense with as much input as possible. Thanks for doing that. Any other questions regarding this issue? Comments? Thanks. We'll move on to the item number 6, the strategic planning, the superintendent's budget recommendations by Dr. Valentine, please.
Well, probably gratefully from your perspective, I think I'm talked out on the superintendent's budget recommendation. This is an opportunity for the board to share amongst itself, and staff certainly will take direction.
Dr. Valentine has put in place a system of strategic planning and budget building and budget direction that is actually comprehensible, logical, with a feedback loop that really advances the board's goals and vision for the district in a way that's tangible, and I really appreciate it. I think it's perhaps your biggest contribution to our district. And I know a lot of folks, Kathy and Brad and a whole bunch of folks, Mary, are involved in it too, but as I told Ed, if the ship were sinking, it would be his fault, so he gets the credit. There is a couple of items. One is I'm really bothered by us looking at the Pacheco program and trying to pull support out of one-time monies and things like that. This may not be the appropriate way to go about this, but I think the board needs to take a longer view about Pacheco and that program and make some decisions about what we're going to do with it, even if the grant that we're hoping will replace the previous grant to help fund it. And it just feels a little too tenuous for the program that's as important as Pacheco is. So that's for whatever it's worth. And then the I have some specific questions about items, but I'm very pleased with it. I think we're very close to figuring out what we want to do with augmentation. I'm a little reluctant to spend a whole lot of time talking about it because I feel the absence of Dave and who's the other person? Chris, that's gone, the president. But I'm very pleased with where we are at this point, and I just wanted to give a attaboy to staff and to bring up that one Pacheco item.
Thank you to Dr. Valentine for all your great work and everyone else who's involved. I had a couple questions. One is, I wanted to say something about one time in response to what you were just saying, Walter. I don't read one time entries as a lack of commitment, though. It's more like creative financing, like this year we're going to do it this way, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to make sure it happens next year in some kind of way. That's how I'm reading, and I don't know if that's how it's intended.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that it was a lack of commitment, but any kind of program that's out there hunting for dollars every year, program that's got
right.
Some risk associated with it. So that's what I meant. I feel like we're committed to the program. I just like us to figure out a little more solid ongoing funding.
Yeah, we're putting that off 1 year, it looks like.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you're right. I feel that same way about music and art in there and other things. I had a question about the EL specialist. On tier one, it's 1.0. EL specialist is 57,000. Oh, because part of it, 29,000 is from categorical. I may be answering my own question. It seemed like that 1.5 was more than 1.5 times more than that amount of money, but it's just because of that categorical, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Answer my own question on that one. And the other thing was on the computers. That's clear down in Tier 3, and I know I brought this up last week, but I'm reading about it over here in the explanation, and just real quickly, it says, over here it says add 150, but on Tier 3 it's add at least 100 computers. But this is in response to requests for more classrooms, limits to new materials, and just what we've heard from Morro Bay and the Ag Department. And thinking of, I mean, Avid, I know it's more than binders at the elementary school, but it seems to me that access to computers is huge in terms of all the things that we're working for, literacy and intervention and, you know, making goals for greater education. And I don't actually understand why it's down in Tier 3. And I think it's really important. And I'd rather have it be in Tier 1.
Thank you. Was that
That's it.
The last comment? Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Valentine, were you going to add something?
Well, I was going to respond to the Pacheco piece. The foreign language grant that Pacheco applied for, no grants were funded by the feds, not because of the quality of the grants, but just the funding was not available, and certainly we're hopeful that that would come back. I agree. I think a decision point needs to be made probably next year with respect to the $175,000 of Pacheco support. I shared with the board that that was probably, if I had to feature something that would be the number one recommendation from my point of view, that would be it. Next year, if we funded nothing new other than Pacheco, that would be the one item if I were deciding at this moment in time, that things change sometimes, mm-hmm. but that's what I would recommend. With respect to the computer piece, I think the difficulty that we had in processing that and in the board's materials, you can see where those 100 computers ranked in terms of everybody's input, and that sort of
I looked at that, but it's also like principals' committees and site councils, and right?
Where is it? Somebody who knows for sure. Oh, here it is. It's classified management, district directors, elementary principals, secondary principals, curriculum council elementary, and curriculum council secondary. What I found really interesting about this list is, you know, not surprisingly, the secondary folks are not as concerned about the elementary council hold harmless, even though everybody went for it. So for me, some of these programs where it didn't seem like it was a particular ox of one group or another, but they still supported it, still ended up on Tier 1. I thought that was very revealing. And also it was sort of revealing that, you know, these disparate groups within our district have their own interest, and, you know, and they ranked them differently. But again, I think it was and I love this table, by the way, that really kind of brought home a lot of information about how these things were ranked.
I think it's a good table, but I don't think it says everything about who wants what.
I think the issue of what people want is a two-pronged question. And prong number one is what do you want? And prong number two is what don't you want? And the exercise that did do that, Avid got kicked in. It wasn't in the template budget. And so those things people were willing to do. But when they came to the question of computers, and trust me, we have discussions with these people, let alone the people that we should have asked, these people who passionately want more technology. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. But even these people who passionately, as recently as today, are lobbying for more computers would not remove what was in Tier 1 in order to get there. Hopefully, we'll either have more money than we anticipate and we'll get down to the 100 computers, or if the board wishes to pull something out of Tier 1, we will certainly follow the board's direction.
There was a couple of things I wanted to mention. I wholeheartedly support Walt's comment about Pacheco also, not to mention this again, and I appreciate, Dr. Valentine, the comments regarding the future, but I too, I think, as a board member, would appreciate seeing our efforts to include that year after year as something that's important to the district and not something that we hope will be funded, knowing that we have to kind of shift things around to make it happen, because I think the Substance would be the certainty for the staff and for the parents that that program is there and not subject to changes each year. The other thing I wanted to ask, and I brought this up before, and I truly do want the board to consider soon rather than later a change in our strategic planning objectives for 2007-2008 regarding developing programs on the visual and performing arts section. The language is complements efforts to raise student literacy, et cetera, et cetera. And I really believe that to address the funding that's on page 3 that we'll benefit from, hopefully, and to also look forward to the programs that we can provide K through 6, that complementary should be taken out and that we should have as a board goal performing arts, standards-based visual arts that is fully integrated and sequential and contributes to our efforts to raise student literacy and the mathematics performance. I think that as a board goal and as our vision develops, that if we can integrate and make it fully sequential, we will create something that will last for a generation rather than the annual discussion regarding funding and what's available, because I think it can be done, and I think the additional funding that we're going to see will help us do that. But I really think that the board, and I hope that we can do this soon rather than later, will embrace the idea that this can be accomplished with what we have, the assets we have in our district, that it's fully integrated and it's a sequential program, not just an add-on, not complementary. And I want to talk about that sooner rather than later, to change it and remove the word complementary. And the other part is that I wanted to mention, I know that the funding for VAPA is $80,000. I believe the numbers on the block, and Dr. Valentine can help me with this, the art and music block grant is about $111,000 if you take it the numbers per student. And then the art, music, and PE supplies, et cetera, block grant is somewhere around $575,000 that we made.
The input from the committee, and we'll be moving forward with a recommendation, and that will be in this year at hopefully the first meeting in June, if not the second.
Then can we also at the next meeting maybe have a discussion to see what the board's desire is relative to the changing of our goals regarding the integration and fully sequential program also? I'm suggesting something in terms of the ongoing strategic planning, because this is part of the strategic planning. I still think it's part of the board discussion here. I mean, as much as we can approve the first tier, second tier, and move on from that, I think we can create a vision for the district that involves that aspect. And maybe the board doesn't support that, and that's fine, but I'm just saying I'd like that to become something that's out front, not to stay the way it is and it's written here, if it's the board's wish to do that. And that's part of the strategic planning. Okay, so I mean, in the further discussions, because I believe this will come up again, won't it, Dr. Valentine?
Yes.
Okay.
I have one question for now, and I just want to make it clear, Dr. Valentine, if you could go through this one more time. I know you've done it one time tonight already, but this is a tiered process, that we really don't have the funding to do any of this, and that as we look at this, these are not any one of these items right now are guaranteed a spot in the budget, and that this is a ranking of some sort?
Yes. What Russell shared tonight is that the what he felt was a conservative assumption of our revenues at a 5% increase in property tax would not be sufficient to fund Tier 1, let alone any other tier, but not even Tier 1, with ongoing dollars. What he also shared was that that didn't necessarily preclude funding Tier 1 through another methodology. The cleanest methodology would be if his conservative assumption, when he receives more current and I think concrete-based information regarding property taxes, if it's just higher, then we do have ongoing money. I mean, if a conservative projected revenues of 6% increase, 6.5% increase. We could fund it straight off the bat with ongoing. But Russell was also suggesting that depending on the prioritization that the board has, we could use a methodology that we have in the past, which is to fund Tier 1 and the one-time money proposal with one-time money, with the understanding that, number one, if the actual revenues come in ongoing, that we would simply convert that one-time expenditure to ongoing, or two, we can wait and see if a year out the funding comes in with ongoing increases that would fund the existing programs and just pick that up as ongoing. Or number three would be to cease the programs. He didn't share that, but that's obviously the third option that's there. What Russell is hoping is that by the June 5th meeting, and I think he's pretty confident, he will have a better handle on what a conservative number might be that will give us a little more comfort in what we're planning. And in the absence of comfort, he wishes to plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Any other questions or comments regarding the strategic planning of the budget? Dr. Valentine, thank you again. Then we can move from item number six into the action consent agenda, and then if someone would indicate if they want something pulled. We have a motion for 7, 9, 10, and 11. Do we have a second? Second by Ms. Chambers. All in favor?
Aye.
Rogers?
Chambers.
Never mind. Okay. Don't even ask. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And now I will turn this over to Mr. Millar for number eight.
Thank you. I just wanted to want to thank everybody who's listed and the groups that are listed for donations, but I just wanted to thank Jill and Joe Sable for their donation of $100 to C.L. Smith's Media Center for purchase of books and materials. Many of you know that Jill Sable was the librarian at C.L. Smith for many years, and one of the best volunteer experiences I ever had was in working in the library with Ms. Sable and watching the way she was with the kids. And her volunteer recognition desserts that she would have every year were not to be missed, and I appreciate it, and I hear they're doing well, and her and Jill in retirement, and they're still involved with the library. So I move approval of item 8.
There's a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Now item number 12, Ms. Dickinson.
I like Jill and Joe Sable, too. I just was looking through these classes offered in adult school, all on literacy and high school diploma, English as a second language. There's a lot of classes. There's 17 just in literacy. High school diploma, 14 classes, ESL for citizenship, career technical education, parenting, family, and consumer awareness, 19 courses. Older adult programs. And fee-supported classes, art, photography, fitness, languages, gardening. But I'm thinking of, you know, my students who graduate from high school. But these are high school students in special day class. Who may, and I've even had, there have been a couple I've known who didn't make it through graduation. But it's so exciting that there are so many ways to continue education. And that, you know, learning can be lifelong, and if you don't meet your goal by the time you're 18, it doesn't mean that you can't get your high school diploma and go to community college. And, of course, you don't need a high school diploma to go to community college, but I just thought it was a great array of courses for the community. And I really hadn't been quite aware that there were that many offered, so I was impressed. So I make a motion that we approve.
It sounded like there's an approval coming. For that. Do we have a second?
Yes.
Second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passes. Now we can move on to the action agenda for consent. We've done that. Sorry. The advance agenda.
If what I'm hearing is correct, and I'm not sure that this is the proper place to put it, but it seems to me it behooves the board to try to find a way to stabilize the funding for Pacheco, and it may be something that we want to do where there's some brainstorming or just something we want to do among ourselves or have staff bring us some suggestions, and I'd like to move that we...
Well, do you want to list it or have it come back again at the beginning of next year and do on the scheduling that way so it comes back again? So we'll have that, the Pacheco School Program?
It just appears that Pacheco has provided such a tremendous service both to students in the community that want to become bilingual and also a service to the other schools and to the district, providing a single location where we can take care of children that need to learn English. So I think it's way too valuable to lose.
I'd just like to... Oh, sorry, Marilyn.
Go ahead, Mr.
Moore. I just wanted to say that that part of the... I believe the best way to approach this is as we go through the next budget cycle next year, that's part of the consideration, because as Dr. Valentine pointed out earlier, it's not about what you want to put in, it's sometimes about what you want to take out in order to pay for what you want to put in. And I think that that process will allow us to set the appropriate priority for funding and come and figure it out.
So just wait until...
Okay. Any other discussion on advanced agenda items? Dr. Valentine?
I would only share that at the next board meeting, the June 5th board meeting, we will be honoring retirees. And it's a lengthy ceremony, and I think it's a very special ceremony. And I think keeping our agenda as lean and mean as possible in order to pay our respects to our retiring teachers is a great idea.
And then the only other thing I was going to mention, I think the board self-evaluation process is scheduled for July 17th. I know we don't have two board members here, but does that still seem like a doable date? And then I think there was a suggestion not to have a moderator because we worked so well together that we thought we could manage the agenda that night. And I just also was curious if the other board members felt comfortable not having a moderator and just having a free-for-all like we usually do now.
I nominate John for the moderator.
I don't think there has to be one, but we can come up with a format as long as the board's comfortable not bringing in a third party. Okay, I'll negotiate my salary later.
Have we moved on to... Are we on advanced agenda or board reports?
Advanced agenda.
I don't know whether this item belongs there, board reports, or where to bring this up, so I'm just going to bring it up now. And I think I've spoken to several of you about it already. I was approached by someone in Los Osos who had concerns about water use at the schools. The Los Osos is as a level 3 severity situation right now in terms of water availability, that we're overdrawing our upper aquifer and we have saltwater intrusion, and I don't know as nearly as much about it as I should, but we are in sort of a critical situation out there. So I called Mr. Parker, I spoke to him, and he parks, because we have only one community park, so they get a lot of use from soccer players and baseball players and families on the weekends, and then we do have PE classes, and we have our own students to be concerned with. So it's just something that we may want to at some point in time address as an issue. Mr. Parker had suggested that perhaps his staff could take a look at, see if there are any ways that they could just right off the top think of conserving water, or if there are any problems that they're aware of, leaks that could be fixed or what have you. And like to get support to ask him to have his staff take a look at what the current situations are at the schools, if there's anything we can do that's fast and easy that would save some water out there, and then downstream have some discussion about it.
Dr. Valentine?
I don't know if you got a response. I have a different topic, so.
I was just going to add something to what Marilyn was saying. You know, I think the school district is in a position to take a lead or participate with any community that has issues regarding its own resources. And I know Los Osos is, I don't even want to make a joke about it. But maybe also in addition to looking at our system out there, maybe we could, the board, if they feel comfortable, could have Brad contact the powers that be in Los Osos and Morro Bay to see if they are developing any programs that they want to implement that they can just say, here's to the school district, we can cooperate in this. If there's any community movement out there for some environmental changes, some along the lines you're discussing.
Well, I mean, to me, irrigation of the fields is a safety issue for students, so I want them to keep irrigating the fields.
I mentioned this to Marilyn. We were talking about on the way down that it seems like in a community where it has to cut back on that has to cut back on water, if all the neighbor yards are dry, at least they could have the common space that's irrigated so families can come and be there and enjoy that. So I think it is a good investment.
Mark?
Sorry. I would also suggest that it's been my experience that schools and these school districts tend to be at the forefront in many, many ways in terms of energy saving, in terms of water saving, and that it might behoove us to share with the community in Los Osos those programs and those things that are in place at the schools so that when they see those green fields, they also know in other places we have been conserving and have been doing it for quite a while.
Okay, and Dr. Valentine?
Just that I'm piggybacking on the self-evaluation. July 17th, no moderator, I'm hearing. The at the June 5th board meeting, the board will have an opportunity to consider and share amongst yourselves questions or issues that you might want to address in that self-evaluation session. And I've just let the board know to start thinking now and look forward to the opportunity to hear what kinds of things you'd like to talk about.
Okay, thank you.
I say, as a former classified employee, I'd like to congratulate all the classified employees on Classified Employee Week. If nothing else, when you get to school and the heater is on and the lights are on, it's because a classified employee has been there first. And at the end of the day, after the rest of us all go home, the lights get turned off by a classified employee. So they're the first there and the first last to leave.
Thanks, Mark. Good point. Any other comments? Any other reports? Seeing, well, wait.
You may not want to hear this, but I just have to say, you know, my oath of office of protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States, whether I went to or not, and whether it's convenient or not, or popular or not, it is an oath. And I think that the H.R. 333 that was authored by Dennis Kucinich is an important resolution in the House that's been supported by others, too, that's calling for the impeachment of Dick Cheney, and it has a lot of grounds laid out for that. And I think this is a nonpartisan issue. And it's when our Bill of Rights is eroded and our balance of powers is eroded and wars are being fought based on, you know, questionable tactics, we have many places in the Constitution where we have a remedy where impeachment doesn't mean we're throwing somebody out of office without a trial. It just means we're going to have a trial. It's like a grand jury. And look at these issues and talk about them because our Constitution is our basis and something very precious to us. So I'm fulfilling my oath by bringing this up, and I personally have it on my phone message, encouraging anyone who happens to call me at my home to also support H.R. 333. But I think it is something that's deserving of public debate. And I didn't bring it up as an advance agenda. I'm not really asking you all to do an a resolution. But that's my report.
Okay, thank you, Adrian. Any other comments? If not, then I'd entertain a motion for adjournment. There's a motion by Mr. Millar. Do I have a second? Oh, we don't? Then all in favor?